Welcome to talkradio.nyc. My name is Graham Dobbin. This is the Mind Behind Leadership. It's Monday, 6 p.m. Eastern in New York and Tuesday, 9 a.m. in Sydney, and a very wet and windy Sydney. We've got a really phenomenal show today. Now, we talk regularly, weekly, in fact, about what approaches should happen in leadership. A key area that was spoken about for almost 2 years is how to deal with change. Now, I'm not trying to be clever here when I say that the only constant is change. That's been proven. It's probably more obvious than at any other time. We've had external influences, but they always seem to happen. We've got weather, health, economics, conflict. It's always been there. It just seems it's a little bit more polarized at the moment. We're privileged to have a guest whose insights from different perspectives, commercially and politically, on kind of what the impacts on those are and how they work. Today's guest is David McCready, OBE. Now, just to give a little bit of background, Got a big smile with that OBE. We're going to dig into that a little bit later. David is regarded as a trusted advisor and expert on Australian-British relationship across both economic and political landscapes. He was a key external advisor in the development of the Australia-UK FTA, which was signed just a few months ago in December of last year. David is kind of unique in a way that he's got relationships across a varied range of businesses. That gives him a really good perspective as that kind of advisor. Now, David has an unusual ability to be able to see the opportunities in businesses, also on the political side, and from two different economies. So this is what makes him a really key asset. His advice is regularly sought by leading industry and political figures, and for the media, including ABC, Ausbiz, Sky News, as well as talkradio.nyc. This is the pinnacle. I get it, David, he's excited. He's the chairman of ECS Botanics, an ASX-listed company director of several unlisted businesses. He's been awarded an MBA from the University of Newcastle. He got a scholarship to attend the Commonwealth Studies Conference in 2015. And as I said, he was made an officer of the Order of the British Empire 18 months ago in 2020 for services to international trade and to the UK-Australia relations. Oh, I get a chance to breathe here, David. Welcome. Good to see you.
Thanks very much for having me, Graham. It's always fun listening to somebody read what you've apparently achieved in life.
It's
great to join you.
We're going to dig into kind of what's the background to these, because we talk about achievements all the time. There's a whole lot of work goes on behind that and kind of what's not seen, because we always see the trophies. But just to give us that, what's your story? What's your background? Where did David come from?
Yeah, well, I was born in Sydney. Both my parents, I think about three or four generations of Australian. People often ask me, where in the UK am I from? But I'm not. I'm very definitely Australian. Can't even get myself a British passport. That's how hard up I am.
Wow.
Born in Sydney, I spent ages sort of 2 to 5 living in Falls Church in Virginia. My dad worked in defence as a civilian in defence procurement, working at the Australian Embassy in Washington, D.C. Came back to Australia when I was 5, did all my schooling here in Sydney, and then disappeared to the UK for a gap year, went to a beautiful place in southern Derbyshire called Repton, which is a public school, as they call them in the UK, boarding school, co-ed boarding school, did a year there, went to Wollongong Uni, did psychology, didn't particularly fancy that after a year, so did sports management. Got a job at Cricket New South Wales whilst I was at university, worked there for 7 or 8 years, spent a fair bit of time. Most of my time was working in cricket operations, so making matches happen.
That must have been exciting.
Yeah, it was terrific. Everything from under 13 girls carnivals right through to international test match men's and women's cricket. So fantastic period of my life. And Yeah, then my wife took a role in Newcastle in New South Wales, which is where I finished my MBA. And I started working for the Hunter Business Chamber, looking after the beautiful Hunter Valley, very good for wine, thoroughbreds and coal, amongst other things. Plenty of great stuff happens up that way. And then after a couple of years up there, I came back to Sydney, was looking for a role and was lucky enough to jag the gig as the Chief Executive of the Australian British Chamber of Commerce. I've been doing that for 12 years now. So been around a while.
Haven't we all, David? That's all good. That's all good. You mentioned Cricket New South Wales. Just talk us through that. That must have been, for somebody who likes cricket, that must have been a dream job.
Yeah, well, I think, I remember being a very young boy going to the SCG with Harvey Wright, who was a great family friend of mine. And we used to go to the cricket. I used to run and save seats early in the morning. For those in Sydney, you'll know or heard of the Paddington Gift, which is the members' run that used to happen before they started allocating seats to people. And used to go and save seats right behind the bowler's arm. And used to look out from the top of the MA Noble stand and think, geez, the guy who has the job to open the gate to let the players onto the field, that's a pretty cool gig. And my ambition slightly went up from just being the guy that opened the gate. And so I did something slightly more achieving, high achieving than that. But yeah, spent a lot of time working with international test cricketers, men and women, and at the New South Wales state level a lot. And it was just a lot of fun. Yeah, it was childhood dream stuff. Yeah, definitely.
It's interesting, actually. I've done a little bit on kind of my sports football back in Scotland and met people who I kind of looked up to. And it changed my one perspective of people, but certainly how I communicated with them as well. Because you can't, especially when you're working beside them, you can't kind of be in awe. You need to have that professional. How did you deal with that?
Yeah, look, to be honest, that was really hard when when I first started working there. I was still a teenager and was very excited to be there. And your idols, guys like Michael Slater, who when I was 14, I had a poster of him on my wall, and there he was in the dressing room. And people like Stuart McGill, Steve Waugh, Mark Waugh, Mark Taylor, these guys were all around. And it was just an extraordinary, extraordinary privilege, really, to be able to be in that space. And look, there are certainly some that I was in awe of, but I think you sort of get your mindset into, I'm here to do a job, and you go about it. And I learned a lot then that's actually really relevant to what I do now in terms of how you deal with people, how you understand their expectations and how they view the world, and then make yourself the most useful that you can be in that environment. And there's a lot of great memories from working with people who were absolutely childhood heroes, but also there's lots of things that are special memories for me that are sort of fairly mundane for others. It's just lucky that I was there at that time.
But is there anything that sticks out, kind of an interaction that you had that was maybe a surprise or just changed the perspective?
Yeah, look, I think, it's probably the memories that I've had in the last little while, given that Shane Warne's just passed away and obviously his memorial service is tomorrow night. And I was lucky enough to work in a period that he was playing cricket for Australia and for Victoria. And amongst other things, I remember having to get his shirt sewn up because he'd given away all his short sleeve shirts in Melbourne after the Melbourne test and come to Sydney with only long sleeve shirts, and they wanted to have the team photo in front of the SCG members stand, which is sort of a traditional thing that they do, and it's quite an iconic photo. And he'd put the shirt on and then cut the sleeves off. And if you've ever seen somebody do that, you wind up with rather messy kind of sleeves. So I had to get those tidied up. and hemmed up. So I had to go out the ground, take your shirt out the ground. And he asked me, would you mind just picking up a copy of New Idea while you're away? My wife's got a piece in there about our relationship and stuff. So I got that. And he said, and while you're there at the news agent, would you mind picking me up a pack of smokes? So, he was just a very normal sort of guy. And I think that's the thing that I really take away from all these things is, often you see people and you think they're a bit aloof or they're a bit different or what have you, but actually he was just a pretty normal sort of person, as most of the cricketers that I ever dealt with were, even those who are, immortals and gods of the game, they're still humans.
Yeah. And I know you said that you only did kind of the psychology for a year. Did any of that help? Did any of that give you any kind of preparation at all for building relationships?
Yeah, look, I think you're always learning. Mm-hmm. And certainly I wouldn't say it was a wasted year. I certainly enjoyed myself and I did pick up quite a lot, actually. I think one of the interesting things is, partly probably bases back in that psychology framework, but it's about understanding what other people's motivations are. And when you understand what their motivations are, it becomes much easier to understand how to deal with people, how to find pragmatic ways that engage them in whatever you're trying to achieve, whether that's building a team, whether that's trying to get a particular goal achieved at work or elsewise. So there's a lot that I took away from the year of psychology. I just, to be honest, the psychology part for me was looking at the pathway ahead was a long way to become a sports psychologist. And I thought, well, maybe sports management might be a bit quicker. And it was. So I enjoyed doing that a little bit faster.
Is that, would you say that was that being pragmatic or impatient? Which was?
Probably pragmatic, knowing my impatience. Is that a good response?
That's a nice balance. We're going to go for a break in a couple of minutes. We'll come back. Really curious about that move from Cricket New South Wales, where you're surrounded by all these people that you maybe admire and getting involved in stuff you really love, going into kind of the business community and where we are now. So really beginning to dig into what a chamber actually means. You're listening to the Mind Bang Leadership. We are lucky enough to have David McCready here, OBE from the Australian British Chamber of Commerce. I've got that correct. I was tripping over that earlier. And you're live. We're live on talkradio.nyc. The Mind Bang Leadership brought to you by Dale Carnegie here in Australia. We'll be right back after these.
Are you a business owner? Do you want to be a business owner? Do you work with business owners? Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics on the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests on Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you on edge? Hey, we live in challenging, edgy times, so let's lean in. I'm Sandra Bargeman, the host of The Edge of Every Day, which airs each Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc. Tune in live with me and my friends and colleagues as we share stories and perspectives about pushing boundaries and exploring our rough edges. That's The Edge of Every Day on Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Welcome back. You're on The Mind Behind Leadership. We have David McCready, OBE, live here from the Australian British Chamber of Commerce. David, what's a Chamber of Commerce?
That's a very good question, and there's not one answer. A Chamber of Commerce is basically a collection of businesses, essentially, and they have different roles depending on what they purport to do. So I worked for the Hunter Business Chamber, and within the Hunter Business Chamber, there were many, many local chambers. So, yeah, many people would be familiar with their local Chamber of Commerce that perhaps in their local community looks after the high street or arranges a fete or make sure the bins are collected regularly and there's no rubbish around the community, all those sorts of, you know, good social aspects to the local trading situation. Obviously, at regional level, state level and national level, things become a bit more political and driven by what are the big levers that we can pull rather than the smaller ones that you might need to pull with a local council. So thinking about everything from taxation through to regulation, different methodologies of business, different issues that come up, whether that's around infrastructure, provision of services of different kinds and so forth. But as a bilateral Chamber of Commerce, our focus is really very much about helping businesses to trade between Australia and the UK and vice versa, and also to invest in each other's countries. And so part of our role is helping facilitate that directly, so introducing businesses to other businesses that might need their services, but also working with government to make that journey as straightforward and easy for businesses as possible, connecting people to the right people that will help their business grow. And part of that, obviously, particularly in the last couple of years, since the UK decided to leave the EU, it's been about forging a new partnership between Australia and the UK and supporting the development of the Free Trade Agreement. There's a whole bunch of other agreements that have happened at the same time as well. The FinTech Bridge a few years ago, the Space Bridge, the Low Carbon or the Clean Technology Partnership, AUKUS, which obviously includes the US as well, the Australia-UK-US Alliance. There's lots of different elements that we're working with government on to understand what they're trying to achieve and how we bring the business community into those conversations and provide the insights to them that they need to get ahead.
It's really interesting, actually, just what you mentioned, that as someone who's lived in the UK, the US and now Australia, you would naturally think there's all these similarities with the countries, but there are just subtle differences that just maybe make settling or doing business or something just not necessarily as straightforward as you would automatically think.
Yeah, look, it's true. I think the interesting thing is it's probably easier to understand when you stop and think about just what it's like in your own country. So if you think the difference between living in Scotland and living in London living in New York or living in Minnesota, or living in Sydney or living in Perth or in the outback somewhere. Yeah, there's lots of different opportunities and different communities and you know, we have a lot of things that underpin our relationships, both within our own countries, but across those three geographies, whether that's English, respect for the rule of law, the way we go about business, the way we count. There are lots of things that are pretty straightforward that we do the same, right? So there's a lot of cultural things that underpin us because, largely we're all built on a British style of society. The US have got a slightly different legal system and their 50 states are not all very different in my own personal experience. And certainly very many parts of the UK and Australia are very different, but we all are underpinned by the common language and a similar experience of life, I guess, in a lot of ways.
That's actually a really good point. I remember doing a lot of work in New York. I don't think I left New York for almost a year, the first year there. And it wasn't until I left New York that I realized the bubble that I'd been in, because everything was completely different. And it was culturally, it was different. The approach needed to be different. And as somebody who stands up in front of rooms speaking regularly, there was lots of times I would come out with a phrase and I would get blank looks. And it was just... So I'm still kind of going through that here a little bit. I'm keen to dig into the community part. You mentioned the word community within a chamber. I know that's important. Just talk us through the kind of your thoughts on that.
Yeah, look, I think that a sense of belonging is really important to a chamber of commerce. Yeah. And the sense of recognizing that whilst you might have a different business from the person next door, you're in a similar boat, because we're all trying to find customers. We're all trying to make sure that we're profitable, hopefully, at the end of the year, that we have enough money to pay the bills, that we're, you know, trying to grow our little business, whatever it is, or big business, as the case may be. But when you recognize that other people have similar challenges, and you recognize that sometimes you can help other people, and sometimes that's beneficial, obviously, to you as a business, they become clients or they might become suppliers, and you build relationships. I'm really conscious, particularly at the Chamber, but I think more broadly in the Australian environment, certainly, and I think it's true in the UK, is people do business with people they like. And so building those relationships and building a community feel where people feel, hey, I need some help, Graham. Can you help me find somebody who looks like this or looks like that, that's within your network? How do I find people who are trusted? How do I find people who will do what they say they will, do what it says on the tin? That increasingly, there's lots of information out there, but being able to trust is one of the hardest things in business and in life. It's something that most of us try and do automatically, probably first up, but we've all had experiences, I'm sure, where people have broken that trust in one way or another. And so working with trusted partners is a strong element of any chamber, being able to recommend people, knowing that, you know, the last person you recommended to them said, yeah, they did a great job and they were fantastic. That sort of community pulls together, supports each other, and finds ways that are mutually beneficial. It's not about being a socialist republic. It's about finding ways that we can help each other commercially to get ahead. And I think that's really important. It's an important construct that we need to share more of.
Yeah, it's... Regularly we talk about how we get introductions to people, refer people, and build that trust. And I think one of the things that's forgotten about is the trust that somebody's putting in you when they're introducing you to someone else, how much respect we've got to give that. Because if you're recommending someone else, you're putting your complete trust that they're actually going to respect the other person. They're not just going to go in and sell to them, or they're not just going to go in and have that whole lot of self-interest.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's an element of self-interest in these conversations, of course. But I think it comes down to authenticity. I always turn up on the same person on this radio show as when I've met you in the past. I'm the same person when I walk out of here and talk to my staff. I'm the same person when I go home and talk to my wife and kids and to my friends at the pub. Whatever the circumstances, I think if you turn up with authenticity and you're honest, then trust is something that's relatively easy to earn and hold. The hard part is when people are less than honest with themselves, often as much as they are with you, and that's where challenges come. But I think part of turning up authentically is being able also to say, well, you know what, I can't help you on this one, and people respect that and trust that as much. And I think that's where, when you get that sense of community, if you can't help, that's okay, because somebody else will be able to. And that's why these sorts of communities are so important.
So we've got, you've got this unique perspective. You're working with some really large businesses. I know you are. You're on the board of an ASX listed. We've got huge global businesses within the chamber. And you've also got kind of what we call one-man bands or sole practitioners or sole proprietors, consultants and small businesses. How do you bridge those kind of... Because my guess is everybody's coming in wanting the introductions to the global companies, and the global companies kind of, you know why people want an introduction to them.
Yeah, look, it's always one of those things that, you know, it's about understanding, going back to, I guess, what I was saying earlier, it's about understanding what people's motivations are. And, there's lots of people who would like me to introduce them to the CEO of BHP Billiton. You know, I remember a guy actually, when I first started here about, it was probably about a year after I started, and Marius Kloppers was the CEO of BHP at the time, and he gave a presentation for us on BHP really looking into climate change as something that they wanted to address and be part of. And we've seen them take some giant strides over a number of years now. So that's very pleasing. But about a week after that, a guy who'd been at the lunch, there were 700 or 800 people in the room, small business person came up to me and said, "Mate, I've got this new mining technology. Could you introduce me to Marius Kloppers so I can tell him all about it?" And I said, "Mate, Marius Kloppers doesn't want to know about your mining technology. There are 100 guys and girls who work for him who would look at that all over the world, different scenarios, et cetera, et cetera. You need to find the right avenue into that procurement process rather than just going to the top." So it's sort of about helping people understand what's the right message for them, because literally you could write that letter to Marius Kloppers and just shake his head and give it to somebody else, and then it may wind up in the right place. Whereas what we try and do is just connect you straight into the right person for you rather than, the person at the top of the tree who's not particularly interested in your small part of their big business.
They may have other priority. I suppose it's about being appropriate, and it's just about learning that. So going to have another break. When we come back from a break, curious about, we looked at kind of big business and smaller business, political leadership alongside business leadership. My guess is there's a big difference there. You've got probably a little bit of a unique insight. So we're going to have a break. This is talkradio.nyc, and you're listening to Mindbang Leadership. We're really lucky to have David McCready from the Australian British Chamber of Commerce. This is brought to you by Dale Carnegie in Australia, and we'll be right back after these.
Howdy, I'm Joseph Franklin McElroy, host of the new podcast, Gateway to the Smokies. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7. Every episode is dedicated to memorable experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and surrounding areas. This show features experts and locals who will expound upon the richness of culture, history, and adventure that awaits you in the Smokies. Tune in every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 on talkradio.nyc.
Are you passionate about the conversation around racism? Hi, I'm Reverend Dr. TLC, host of the Dismantle Racism Show, which airs every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Join me and my amazing guests as we discuss ways to uncover, dismantle, and eradicate racism. That's Thursdays at 11 o'clock a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a small business trying to navigate the COVID-19 related employment laws? Hello, I'm Eric Sauver, employment law business law attorney and host of the new radio show, Employment Law Today. On my show, we'll have guests to discuss the common employment law challenges business owners are facing during these trying times. Tune in on Tuesday evenings from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Welcome back to the Mind Buying Leadership. David, you didn't even dance. You've not been dancing yet to that theme tune. We normally get people dancing by this time when it's the third one. Welcome back. We're talking everything around community, around FTTAs, around the chamber work, just the kind of how we pull businesses together. Now, one of the things I mentioned just before the break was you've got probably a bit of a unique insight where you see some serious business leaders here. And you also see politicians. Now, we used it. Let's just be upfront here, David. We used the word trust earlier about leadership. And I think it's fair to say I worked with some politicians myself. Trust isn't something that's always given to politicians. I think in business, sometimes we assume trust. And then when we look at politics, it's almost the reverse. What's your views, thoughts? What have you seen?
Yeah. It's an interesting question because I think it's always important to understand people's motivations for doing what they do. And I think one of the things that I know about politicians, in fact, this is a great quote that I picked up from my Commonwealth Study Conference program when we're talking through a group of us, we're talking through challenges of leadership. And we really felt that most people don't generally turn up to a job day in, day out thinking, I really want to do a dreadful job today. I think most people turn up thinking, even if it's a bit of a drudge, a bit of a grind at work, and I think we all have those days, doesn't matter what you do. I think people generally turn up wanting to do a good job. And when I think about all the politicians that I've ever met, I can't really think of any who didn't want to make a positive change in the world. And look, there's lots of reasons why the edges get beaten out of them, why the shape of what they deliver in the end isn't necessarily what they thought that they would bring to the table when they first joined a political party or have the idea of running. It's a hard world, politics. It really is in a lot of ways. And I think people have to find the pragmatic and compromise in everything. And that's, they say that politics is the art of compromise, right? So you don't always get what you want. And, sometimes the perfect can't be the enemy of the good. You just got to take what you can get and move the needle forward and hopefully, slowly but surely, you'll move the ball down the field, and hopefully during your tenure, however long that might be, whether it's one term or over a number of terms, and whether that's in government or in opposition or on the crossbenches, there are roles that people can play that can help shape a better world, and it's hard. And look, the trust part is difficult for politicians because they are pulled by so many different needs. Business people, it's pretty simple. I've got a job to do. I know who my shareholders are, my key stakeholders are. I know roughly the direction of travel, and I can explain almost everything I do by reverting back to those core stakeholders. I think if you ask politicians about that, generally that's true as well. I'm not going to say it's true in every case because in business it's not always true either. There's always
somebody you say that. Who's, completely agree.
There's always somebody who's going to be not 100% honest or try and pull one over you or all of those sorts of things. But I think it's just a very challenging space when you have stakeholders about a particular issue that don't necessarily meet with the stakeholders in your own constituency. We've seen plenty of examples of that over recent years, whether it's been issues like climate change or gay marriage or other things where, for whatever reason, people have different views. And that's one of the great things about a democracy is we're able to have different views. And I think, fundamentally for me, I'm sort of somewhat libertarian. I sort of feel like you should be allowed to do whatever you like as long as you don't hurt somebody else or impinge on somebody else's rights whilst you're doing that. So, that sort of motivates me to sort of always look for what is it that somebody else wants out of life. And if I can help facilitate that for them, then that's good.
It's a large part about respect. Just, you know, when we respect the other person, and we see this in leadership all the time, we see this especially in some of the larger companies that we work with, that they've got the vision, everybody knows the message, we know what the purpose of the business is, and even then people aren't engaged with it. There's still that struggle. So when it comes to politics, I mean, the word I wrote down, or kind of the phrase was like, they're always under scrutiny. It's constantly. Yeah. And you must have felt some of that, especially over the last couple of years, where no matter what decisions we made, there was always somebody turning around and saying, we should have been doing something else or having a different opinion. I'm curious, is kind of leading a chamber, you've got got the political side as well as the economic side. This last couple of years must have been difficult when making decisions then.
Yeah, look, I think, again, when you base it back in the conversations that you have with members and you understand what their feeling and attitude is, then you get yourself into a pretty solid position to represent that coming forward. And I think, as I said earlier, I don't think there are many people who turn up to work wanting to do a bad job.
And absolutely.
And I think you can respect other people's opinions, and even if they're in the minority view on an issue, and I've, we've been in plenty of places over the last couple of years where it's a sort of an alternate black or white option. There isn't the shade of grey, which is where quite often chambers like to operate, where we can sort of help people manoeuvre through things. Brexit was in or out. An FTA has provisions and doesn't have provisions. There are things which are, fairly binary, and it's understanding where the people who are on the other side of that decision come from, and understanding their motivation, and then supporting them to find what that new reality must be if they're not going to be on the winning side of a decision. And there's lots of examples of things that have, I think have been good progress steps taken, but have had detrimental impacts on some of the businesses we work with. And so we've had to find other ways to support them. And I think that's part of a parcel of being, again, going back to that community sense. It's making sure that you're not leaving people behind when you do take a step in a particular direction.
You're right. I mean, it's all about intent. The intent's right, then the tough decisions still need to be made, but they're a little bit easier kind of to maybe even justify personally. I'm curious, without getting into the rights and wrongs or the pros or cons, Brexit, did that make the FTA easier or more difficult? That's maybe a big question.
Yeah, well, the FTA couldn't have happened. A bilateral FTA couldn't have happened previously.
Right.
So part of the European Union construct is that they have a shared trading area, the single market, and the only people who are allowed to negotiate on behalf of the single market with any other market is the EU Commission. And Australia have been negotiating, I think we're up to round 12 of negotiations with the EU. It's taking a while. There's 27 countries, obviously, within the EU, and there's one on the Australian side. So getting that sort of coherence across all of them will take a little while. But with the UK, once it left the EU, it regained its own independent trade policy, and that enabled us to be able to have an FTA, a bilateral FTA directly with the UK, something that wasn't possible. They were part of the EU negotiations when we started, and they obviously left those negotiations when they left the EU. And now we've managed to sign a free trade agreement with the UK independently. It was critical. Brexit was critical for us to have a bilateral.
So it couldn't have happened without Brexit. That's kind of where I was going with this.
Yeah, no, it could not. Not a bilateral one.
Not bilateral.
We'd still be waiting for the EU one to come together.
So I'm going to test you on the different parts. I'm not going to test you, I promise. what's the purpose of an FTA? What does it do?
Look, the basic premise of a free trade agreement is to promote free trade. It's pretty simple. It's in the names in the title. So it does what it says on the tin, you might say.
So what does that mean practically for businesses?
So between two countries, we have things called tariffs, which are applied to goods that are imported into our country. So, for example, if you are importing motor vehicles into Australia, we have a 5% tariff on passenger vehicles. We also have a 5% tariff on things like Scotch whiskey. There's all sorts of machinery, books, all sorts of things that we have tariffs on. And the UK has a set of tariffs as well. Things like our agricultural products and other things that we want to export to the UK also have a tariff. Now, that tariff is effectively a tax that does nothing other than slightly discourage people from wanting to export to our country because it makes their products less competitive in our market. So as a free market country, as Australia is, and the UK and the US for that matter, But I would argue the UK and Australia are probably more free marketeers than the US at times. The US have a very strong trade division that are very good at protecting US interests. Australia and the UK take a slightly different view, which is the more open we can be in our trade and investment regimes with our friends in particular, the better the outcome is for our economy, because you can get more of whatever it is that you're doing at a better price, better quality perhaps, happening in your economy on a regular basis. So whether that's around goods or services, whether that's around investment, whether that's capital moving people around the place to be able to deliver services or products, the easier you make that, the better it is for your economy, the more chance your economy as a whole has to grow, and it makes your economy more competitive. So if Australian beef, for example, can turn up on a supermarket shelf in the UK, be price competitive and quality competitive with beef that's currently imported from France or Ireland tariff free, well, terrific. But I'd suggest it's going to be pretty hard to do that from the other side of the world. We've got a huge amount of shipping costs and other things that would have to go into it. If you make the market more competitive, it makes your businesses more resilient, and exporting makes companies more resilient because you're operating in a number of different economic markets with different economic conditions. You might have a downturn in one and the other ones might be doing well, and so you're able to balance your business more effectively. The simple diversification strategy, if you like, within your own business that allows you to be in a better place to take on the world. So that's what free trade's really about, is building better businesses and better economies.
It sounds as if this should be something that's fairly easy. My guess is it's not. My guess is there's a lot of negotiation. But when that's the purpose of it, is to create kind of that economic movement, my guess is it should be much easier than it is.
Yeah, look, I think it should be. And the reality is that, there are lots of things that historically were there for various reasons, like the 5% tariff on passenger vehicles was to protect our car industry. We don't have a car industry in Australia anymore. So there's no real point having that tariff. We should get rid of it. We should get rid of it across the board. But in negotiations, you need things to trade. So we don't just give it away to everyone on day one. We find other things that we might want. We find a way to negotiate those out.
If you've managed to negotiate the 5% tariff on Scotch whiskey, you're my man, David. We're going to go for a break. When we come back, really curious. Let's kind of dig into some of the other things that you've been involved with, especially around the OBE. I'm curious about how that happens. And also this Commonwealth Study Group that you were part of, you mentioned kind of briefly earlier. And we'll have a little look at that. You're listening to the talkradio.nyc, and we have David McCready, OBE. My name's Graham Dobbin. This is The Mind Behind Leadership. We'll be back after the news.
Hey, everybody. It's Tommy D, the nonprofit sector connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host a program, Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
In a post-COVID world, you may have many unanswered questions regarding your health. Are you looking to live a healthier lifestyle? Do you have a desire to learn more about mental health and enhance your quality of life? Or do you just want to participate in self-understanding and awareness? I'm Frank R. Harrison, host of Frank About Health, and each Thursday, I will tackle these questions and work to enlighten you. Tune in every Thursday at 5 p.m. on talkradio.nyc, and I will be Frank About Health to advocate for all of us.
All pet lovers.
Pet Avengers, assemble!
On the Professionals and Animal Lovers show, we believe the bond between animal lovers is incredibly strong. It mirrors that bond between pets and their owners. Through this program, we come together to learn, educate, and advocate.
Join us live every Wednesday at 2 p.m. at talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Hi, David. I tried to get you to dance. It didn't happen. Welcome back to Talk Radio NYC, the mind behind leadership. We have David McCready, OBE. How did that happen?
Well, the British government decided to offer me an award, and I decided to accept. It's I don't know the who nominated me. That's not part of the process. You don't get to find that out, but I've been involved in nominating other people for similar awards. And
is that correct, David? You've nominated others?
I have, yes. Not you yet, Graham, but
okay. I've always liked you, David. Just so you know.
we can work on that. It's okay. But there's basically a nomination process where again, it's sort of people from the community recognize that somebody has achieved or been valuable to the community as a whole and nominates an individual, and they get supporting corroborating evidence, if you like, from others in the community to put somebody forward. And then it's sent off to whichever body it is that, in this case, the British Empire Awards, and somebody decide, you know, there's a committee that decides that you're worthy. For me, the first I knew about it was about 7 o'clock on a Sunday evening. I got a call from the British High Commissioner. I was at home with my wife and my two young kids who were, you know, it was bathing time and all, you know, Sunday night, trying to get ready for the week ahead. And I thought, oh my goodness, what's happened? This is not good. If there's the High Commission doesn't normally ring me on a Sunday night at 7 o'clock.
And, they don't.
And it was Her Excellency Vicky Trudell, the British High Commission to Australia, rang and said, have you got a minute? And I said, yeah, absolutely. And I took myself off away from the family. And she basically said, look, there's a funny routine that happens because you're not meant to turn down an award. So first thing she asks is, if the British government were considering giving you an award, would you accept it? And I said, well, yes, if you were considering giving me an award, I would, of course, be delighted to accept it. And then she said, well, you've been nominated for an Order of the British Empire and to become an officer of the Order of the British Empire. And so, you know, would you accept that? And I said, yes, definitely, I'd be delighted. This was in June of 2020. And she said, right, there'll be some paperwork and things that you need to do, but you'll be announced on the Queen's birthday weekend honours list. And I went, okay, terrific. She said, you're not allowed to tell anyone. And until it's announced formally, you're not allowed to tell anyone. So I thought, oh, well, that's okay. So only a week till the Queen's birthday will be fine. I filled in the paperwork the next day and sent it back. And then on the Wednesday, she rang and said, Boris Johnson's decided as Prime Minister of the UK to delay the announcement of the awards this year until we've got some idea of some people that we can give awards to who've been responders to the pandemic. I had to keep the news under my hat until it was finally announced on the 10th of October. So it actually wound up being from June to October. I knew that I was going to get one of these things, but I had to keep it under my hat.
How difficult was that?
Not particularly difficult, actually.
Yeah.
I was obviously very chuffed and incredibly humbled to think that other people think that what I've done has made a significant contribution and that they felt that I should be nominated and that the committee felt that I should be awarded it. So yeah, I took that as a nice pat on the back, but there were times certainly where with friends and things that you sort of want to. Yeah, the back of your head, you'd be going, could I tell them? No, I've got to do this right. But it was just terrific. And the response that people, when it was announced, the response from my team and from our board and from our members more broadly and from my friends, people I hadn't seen, some of them for 10 or 15 years, nice. Making note of it and dropping me a note to say congratulations was really incredibly moving.
This links back kind of the community thing that we spoke about earlier. It's all about people. You don't necessarily need to see somebody to kind of have that emotional reaction when something positive happens and we reach out. It'd be probably easier now than ever. Curious, do people treat you differently?
No.
With that at the end of the name?
No, I don't get any upgrades on flights.
No?
No, better seats in restaurants. Not that I've noticed anyway, let's put it that way. I think people are always curious to know what it is, particularly in Australia, because I think
of course
we're a fairly egalitarian society. We don't even necessarily recognize the old AO and OAMs and ACs and other things here as much as perhaps we should. There's no particular special treatment. I think that's part of being part of the community too, is that yes, it's a great recognition. I'm incredibly humbled by it, but I don't want to be treated any differently, actually, because for me, this is a mark of the role I've had in our community, but it's actually about how important our community is in the conversation more broadly.
Interesting how we come back to community, even in something like this, we come back to me. You mentioned earlier that you were part of a Commonwealth study program. Can you kind of just touch on that? Because that sounded like it kind of crossed over different types of leadership.
Yeah, it was an incredible experience for me, actually. I was lucky enough to be invited to participate in the Commonwealth Study Conference in the UK in 2015, and the program was a week in the UK in April, and then a week in the UK, in India in July. And others on the same program went to Kenya, others went to Singapore. But the great thing was experiential learning, and we had people from, I think, 53, there are 54 countries now in the Commonwealth, I think it was 53 back then, and we had about 27 countries represented. So people that I would never have met otherwise from various countries in the Caribbean, from Canada, from Malaysia, India, all over the subcontinent, all over the world, and really learning about people in a very different way and about their experience and sharing experiences of leadership and life amongst people was really, really fantastic. And I really encourage people. There's a Canadian program going to happen next year. If you look up CSC Canada, you'll find it. And it's a really great experience. And I really highly recommend it to anyone who'd like to participate.
It sounds an amazing experience, David. We'll get the details from you, and I'll share that as well. Look, we've only got a couple of minutes left. Really keen. We've spoken about authenticity, about belonging, about community. What, in your eyes, of non-compromising? What's the things that absolutely are the guide for David when we talk about kind of how we work with people, the relationships, leadership? What's your non-compromise?
I think honesty and integrity, absolutely non-compromisable. If you got into a position where I felt any of those things, if I felt that I was being impinged upon or that wasn't what was going to happen in a relationship, that would terminate it for me. And I'd be, I've had to have those frank conversations with people in the past. Because if you're not bringing your true self, if you're not bringing your true self to work every day, you're not going to be happy. You're not going to enjoy it. You're going to feel compromised all the time. And that's not good for anybody's personal well-being and mental health, particularly when you think of the last couple of years. You need to be in a position that, you're in a good mental health space to deal with other people, because that's the most important thing at the end of the day.
David McCready, OBE from Australian British Chamber of Commerce, thank you so much for the last hour and for your insights. You've been listening to the Mind Buying Leadership on talkradio.nyc. We'll be back with you next week. Have a good week. Bye.
Business owner. Do you want to be a business owner? Do you work with business owners? Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics on the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests on Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you on edge? Hey, we live in challenging, edgy times, so let's lean in. I'm Sandra Bargeman, the host of The Edge of Every Day, which airs each Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc. Tune in live with me and my friends and colleagues as we share stories and perspectives about pushing boundaries and exploring our rough edges. That's The Edge of Every Day on Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Informed about menopause and how it impacts on your life? Hi, I'm Pat Duckworth, women's health strategist and host of the Hot Women Rock radio show, empowering women leaders at menopause. Join me every Thursday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. UK time on talkradio.nyc for interviews with inspirational women who will share their top tips to rock your world.
In a post-COVID world, you may have many unanswered questions regarding your health. Are you looking to live a healthier lifestyle? Do you have a desire to learn more about mental health and enhance your quality of life? Or do you just want to participate in self-understanding and awareness? I'm Frank R. Harrison, host of Frank About Health, and each Thursday, I will tackle these questions and work to enlighten you. Tune in every Thursday at 5 p.m. on talkradio.nyc, and I will be Frank About Health to advocate for all of us.
Gateway to the Smokies. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7. Every episode is dedicated to memorable experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and surrounding areas. This show features experts and locals who will expound upon the richness of culture, history, and adventure that awaits you in the Smokies. Tune in every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.